Welcome to Fat Camp Show Number 10 for March 19th, 2016. Fatbike.com presents Fat Camp, a monthly podcast covering different technical aspects of fat and plus size bikes. Look for all our shows at fat-bike.com/fatcamp or subscribe to our feed on iTunes.
Welcome to Fat Camp, campers.
Welcome.
And it's the end of February when we're recording this, and now we're probably, when you're listening to it, we're into March, and we thought it would be a good idea if we kind of reflected on, you know, since we're through the bulk of winter, might have, you know, a few more inches of snow here and there, but for pretty much fat biking in the winter, we're pretty much done with it and looking forward to moving on into spring riding.
Yeah, we're solidly into our spring snow conditions. So
surprisingly, though.
Yeah, it's awfully early. I'm kind of bummed that's happening at the end of February instead of end of March. But, hey, what can you do?
Yeah, exactly. You know? Good old El Nino.
Enjoy it while you got it.
Yep.
You know?
Never did like her. So we're going to spend some time reflecting on our 6 weeks of winter that we had.
The state of fat.
Right. And then we're also going to look forward to the state of plusness.
Yes. Yeah, because I mean, I know for myself, mentally, I've kind of shifted gears at this point, and I'm starting to think about spring, you know, trips and, you know, when I need to have a bike and what bike do I want to have and
right.
blah, 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 blah. So,
yeah.
And I've started to get a bunch of, you know, like requests from people for building wheels and things like that. So it's, I've had to look around at what's finally available. I mean, we hear all this hype out of the inner bike and Euro bike and all these types of things, and now a lot of those products are actually available, and there's some products that I didn't really get cued into at that time that are out now that are widely available
so we're going to reflect on winter and hypothesize spring.
Yes, talk about what gets us happy and stoked.
Right on. First thing we want to reflect upon from January and February, since that was the only time that we got any snow, are tires.
Yeah, tires are always a big topic with fat bikes because, let's face it, I mean, that probably makes a bigger effect on the performance, that and the pressure of your tires, bigger
right.
effect on your performance than any other component or part of a fat bike.
Sure. And what did we learn this winter, though?
The big thing I learned is fat isn't slow. It seems to be more a matter of tread pattern.
Okay.
Fatter tires are a little bit heavier, but so often I've found weight doesn't make that big a difference in winter riding. I mean, it can be nice from an acceleration standpoint to have a lighter setup, but I mean, if you're riding a 1400 gram tire, you're riding a 1300 gram tire, it doesn't really make that big a difference.
But you know, you say that, but didn't we learn in some cases that fatter is slower?
I wouldn't say fatter is slower. I'd say, once again, it comes back to tread pattern.
Tread pattern,
there's,
okay.
You know, there's certain right. tread patterns that are slow.
Gotcha, okay.
So, and I guess, you know, let's kind of take a little more nuanced with that.
Okay.
So, I know me, I've pretty much only been on fat tires. I guess I don't think, for where I live and the riding I do, sort of my weight and stuff, I mean, I weigh like 190, 200.
Lard ass.
Yep. I don't see myself ever riding a 4-inch tire again during the winter.
I didn't, you know, just riding with different kinds of people, I didn't see, you know, when you see that 4-inch tire, you're like, whoa, that's a skinny
yeah.
tire.
Yeah, that's like a plus tire or
right,
something. Yeah,
right.
It's puny. You know, if you don't really have a whole lot of snow, I can see where you could get away with it, you know, if you're on pretty hard packed conditions. But if you got snow, 4-inch tire in general sucks, unless it's just like super rock hard, like primo conditions, which quite frankly doesn't happen that frequently.
Yeah, and I need to remind myself that my perspective is a full-on winter. You know, it's not different regions have different kinds of winters, and ours is, you're going to get snow, guaranteed,
yeah. yep.
and so you're going to want bigger tires than 4-inch tires, but, you know, like you mentioned, in different parts of the country, heck,
yeah.
you know, a D4 is rocking, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I just know from my situation, I don't ever see myself with real winter riding ever riding a 4-inch tire again. I don't even know about a 4.2. I think the smallest I would probably go is about 4.5.
Okay.
So I spent a lot of time on tires between 4.5 and like 5.1.
Okay.
And Spent a ton of time on the Flow and the Dunder Beast from 45 North. Love those tires.
Okay.
A fair amount of time on the Bontrager Barbagazzi, the 4.7.
Okay.
26-inch tire. Spent some time on the Big Fat Nard, the 4.8-inch Nard.
Okay.
Spent time on Bud and Lou's.
Yep.
Spent time on the Maxxis Minions, the 4.8, like FBR and FBF.
Yeah, yeah. Yep.
And then the V-Rubber 2XL.
Yeah, the king, the fattest of the fat.
Yeah, and I actually haven't even had to crack out Dillinger 5s studded one time this year.
Okay.
We haven't had any ice.
Right, right.
So we're still working down our base. That's coming.
I sampled a few different tires, and I'm going to go back to Bud and Lou. I mean, the Minions, you know, they have their place, and the 2XL, if you've got, you know, you're hammering through powder and you have to put a foot down, you won't with those. And the other tires have their place, but I just think all around, Bud and Lou get you to where you want to go.
I would put a big old asterisk on that. It seems like, you know, one of the big things we've seen is that grooming has become commonplace at this point.
Right.
You know, the boom of the groom.
The boom of the groom.
Yeah, as we described it before.
Right.
So we really have two common types of riding still, or at least in our general neck of the woods. We got groom trail. And the Bud and Lou are not, I wouldn't say, the best tire for that. We can talk more about that in a little bit.
Okay. I'll wrestle you for it.
When you start getting into, like, snowmobile trail and more backcountry type stuff, just
sure.
Like your general all-around, like, and you might be going out and there is, like, no track. I mean, it's, like, somewhere underneath your 6 to 8 inches of powder there was snowmobile trail, but, I mean, you wouldn't know it.
Sure.
You know, in those kind of conditions, the Bud and Lou still kicks ass.
Right.
I mean, the Bud and Lou are a great set of tires for, like, Truon, you know, winter.
Right.
Even though they're not tubeless compatible, I love running them tubeless. They've got that super supple casing. So, I guess one other thing kind of that I don't – this is just a perception right now. I got no real data to base it off of. But it seems like a lot of the tubeless-ready tires, or the tires with a stiffer casing, have a much more sensitive temperature range. With a lot of pressure, all the tires pretty much roll pretty similarly. You don't notice that big difference. But as you start to drop pressure, there's sort of a point where you get too low and all of a sudden the bike gets really slow.
Okay.
Or you start bouncing or whatever. It's just, you know, there seems like there's a lot of rolling resistance you pick up all of a sudden at a certain point. And that might not be that big a deal if it's really, you know, like you got a crust type condition and you got to have a big footprint so you can float over the top, or it's powder and, you know, you just need all the traction you can get or whatever. You know, that low pressure might be good, but as soon as then you transition to like harder pack or whatever and it just feels like you're getting sucked into the ground, the stiff casing tires seem to have a much more narrow range before they get super snot slow on hard pack.
Holy crap, I never thought about that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. So getting back to kind of like the Bud and Lou thing.
Yeah.
The Bud and Lou are a super supple casing. I mean, I think I had mentioned on the show before, but they remind me of like a really nice, like high TPI cotton casing road tire.
Huh.
Where all of a sudden it's just, you know, it just has this magical ride. The Bud and Lou's kind of seem to have that. And I've had no problems with them tubeless. They've been
neither
rock solid.
Yeah, neither have I. But you know, set my tubeless up, so that's why there's no problem.
Yeah, and I've been going two seasons on the same pair of tires. Haven't ridden them a ton this year. But,
yeah.
I mean, they haven't been like my staple tire, but I've spent a lot of time on them, and they've been awesome.
I want to put an asterisk to your asterisk then. Because here's the thing that if you haven't figured it out, folks, Ken has a shit ton of bikes. He's got two fat bikes. I don't know how many sets of wheels he's got, but he can, you know, for me, I've got one fat bike. I've got one set of wheels. And so if I'm going to slap one set of tires on there and they're going to be tubeless and it's not a tubeless ready rim, I don't want to mess in it, because you can really dial in. If you plan ahead, you can dial in that next condition. Like, I know what the conditions are going to be in the morning, so I'm going to put this different tire down, because we've got so many different tires now.
Yeah,
but
we're spoiled.
I'm not going.
Well,
you can
me.
Switch tires out left and right, because you got 18 pairs of wheels in there. You just got
okay.
And it's like pulling out underwear in the morning. You just go over and you're like, oh look, conditions are this. It's a beastie kind of day. Well, I, as long as, as well as many others, you got one set of hoops and you're going to, that's, it's a pain in the butt, you know. That's my asterisk to your asterisk, though.
No, I mean, and Andy's right. I am highly spoiled. I would be the first to say that. I have two fat bikes that both are really nice, and I kind of have one set up for more groomed kind of conditions, and I got another one kind of set up for the backcountry.
For the expeditions, yeah.
Yeah, and then what I'll do is I can switch the tires easily on them because they're tubeless ready rims, and they're really easy to set up.
That's something else we learned, though, about...
We'll get to that.
Okay,
we'll
all right, that. All right, that, all right.
Yeah, we don't want to get too far off track.
Sometimes we say we're going to get to it, and we never do, though.
Well, it's on the agenda.
Okay,
so
right,
we'll
right.
get to
all
it.
All right, so back to tires, button loop.
But no, but so I've been able to swap back and forth.
Right.
So it's very easy, like even on a given ride, to hit, you know, pull out one bike, go ride it, and then pull out the other bike and go ride it, and be able to compare head-to-head tires. So... Yeah.
I lucked out because I could do that because Gomez hooked me up with a little test ride this year.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Still, I mean, I normally can't do that.
Yeah, but that's a really handy thing to do because then it really kind of gives you some more nuance about what's up with tires. So,
oh my gosh, we're all going to get divorced from our wives, folks, because Ken's advice is to go buy more fat bike wheel sets.
No.
And we're going to buy the carbon ones too, you know?
No. I wouldn't say that. The thing is, you know, that's the thing about a lot of these tires is that, you know, okay, let me just sort of the Maxxis Minion. That seems like a real direct comparison to the button loop.
I can talk about it, yeah.
The Maxxis Minion is one of those cases where it's got a much stiffer casing. So okay. It seems like it's got a much more narrow pressure range before it feels dog slow or it's smoking fast and doing great.
Right.
It's a great all-rounder tire.
Uh-huh.
You've got enough sort of burled in the knobs. You got enough sorry, Andy's moving the fire and he's distracting me right now. It's getting a little smoky over here.
We tried to have a real fire for Fat Camp and man.
Yeah, it's making you cry.
Oh, I smell like a bong.
So, the Minion, moving on. It's got enough of a burly knob situation that it can handle deeper snow and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's not as good as the Button Loop in those conditions.
No, it's not.
But
it's not.
It'll do okay.
It's a great middle-of-the-road tire.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
So, you know, I mean, if you had to get one tire and you're okay with having sometimes more tire than you need... Because, I mean, let's face it, a 4.8-inch tire that's on the burly end, you don't always need that.
Right.
Especially in groomed situations.
Yeah.
But it's going to roll pretty good in groomed if you air it up. So you're going to be able to hang with somebody that's got a much, much, much quicker, smaller tire.
Did you experience with the Minions their performance was better than the Beasties in non-groomed conditions?
Actually, yes and no.
Okay.
Okay, the one case where I'd say that they did do better than the Beasties was when you really just needed float. Like, if you needed to have just a big old foot burning on the ground, the Minions, I mean, just by the fact that it's a bigger tire,
mm-hmm.
they benefited, mm-hmm. for sure. But as far as, like, the tread patterns and stuff go, I'm a bigger fan of the Beasties.
I didn't think the tread pattern was that different, though.
No, they're not drastically very similar. Different.
Yeah.
Oh, well, not on the front. The fronts are drastically different.
Right.
Because the front of that, the Flow Beast, that thing's got like that crazy V on the end, you know, sort of the interior part of the tire.
Yeah.
And it's got some really distinctive knobs on the outside for cornering. Uh-huh. So that tire has got like no self-steer from what I can tell, even like when you're running like stupidly low pressure for the conditions. You know, which is a nice trait. It seems to roll pretty fast, and it really grips corners well. So I think the Flow Beast is an amazing front tire, much better than the FBF in a lot of conditions. It just doesn't have a ton of float. It's not going to keep you on top of stuff.
Gotcha.
The rear tires between the two are very, very similar. Like the FBR, the Maxxis Minion FBR, and then the...
Dunder Beast,
I got to think of all these beastie names.
Right.
They're both, I mean, they're really, really, really similar, and I'd say almost the biggest distinction between the two is that I think the Minion is a little bit quicker rolling, because the Beastie is like a total paddle wheel.
Uh-huh.
And then the other thing about the paddle wheels, and this, I find this to be a really fun trait, but like when you're going around corners and you're still laying down power, the rear end has a tendency to kind of like brap out on you.
Oh yeah.
And it's very controllable, like, you know, as while you're putting down the power, and it's just this really fun feel. It's almost like, you know, you have two-wheel steering. You know, you direct the front wheel where you want it, and then if you're like, brap, you know, and just kick that rear wheel out a little bit more, and then you're ready to shoot out of the corner. So, you know, I still think the Flow Beast and the Dunder Beast, that is such a fun combination. I really like that tire setup.
Would that be I don't think that'd be as good of an all-arounder, though. Do you?
If you were a lighter rider, it'd be pretty good.
Okay.
The only thing is, excuse me, it's not a super fast rolling tire.
Okay.
And, you know, it's like, it's I'm not going to say it's a slow rolling tire. I mean, for how aggressive a knob it isn't slow.
Uh-huh.
It's just, it's a aggressively knobbed tire, so it isn't fast. You know, it's kind of that, like, middle of the road to slow end of things. But it's going to grip like a mother.
Right. Are there some tires that you wish you could have ridden?
I really would be interested in, I mean, I don't even think it's, like, purchasable yet, but I really want to ride a 27.5 by the 4.5 track setup, the Bargazzi.
That'll fit, right?
Yeah, it's going to fit within the size of a 4.8-inch tire.
Okay.
Or, excuse me, a 29-plus tire. Like, a little bit, it's going to be on the big side for a 26 by 4.8-inch.
Gotcha.
But it'll fit on a lot of bikes. And I think that's going to be a really, really fast rolling kind of. It should end up being a pretty sweet tire, I think.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. There's a couple other ones that.
I just wanted to throw that out there. Yeah. I was just like, maybe there's some other tires out there.
Yeah. No. There are a couple other ones. The Big Fat Nard.
Yeah.
Surprises me in the winter.
Really.
Actually. It's got so many little blocks on there, and
yeah.
It's so big. It by virtue of surface area, it can grab onto a lot of stuff. So in your harder conditions, if you have a 4.8-inch bike and you don't want to put on a little tire because it drops your bottom bracket too much,
yeah.
That can be a sweet, sweet, sweet tire.
Okay.
And there's times where, like in crusty conditions and stuff like that, having the extra float can be really nice. And it's such a fast rolling tire.
Yeah.
I mean, that really can compete with a 4-inch
tire. So that surprised you this winter.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, I've been super impressed with the Big Fat Nard.
Right on. Is there anything else, tire talk?
Bargazzis.
I like those.
They seem like another. If you mostly ride groomed and then you sometimes get into stuff that's not groomed, the Bargazzi would be a pretty decent tire. It doesn't have great traction, like drive traction or anything, or cornering traction when you're in a couple inches of fresh snow, but it's okay. It's a true 4.7-inch. You know, I was glad they produced it true to size.
Yeah.
That impressed me. And it's light. I mean, it's a tire. It's a pretty versatile tire that I would take to, like, a race scenario. I wouldn't go out venturing on it. You know, I would go to a groom trail.
That was my question. It was like, because of the conditions we had this winter versus the last two winters when it was just powder fest.
Right.
You know, we didn't have a lot of that, so it didn't not work out for you this year.
I don't think it's as fast as the Big Fat Nard, but I think it's more versatile than the Big Fat Nard.
Okay.
So I think there's a wider range of conditions where it'd be really good. So, I mean, I think I could see a lot of times, they're kind of similar. They're a smaller knob tire. There's way more space between knobs on the Bargazzi, but they're pretty similar in size.
Okay.
They both roll pretty darn good.
Yep.
So, the Bargazzi is going to clear a little bit better. It's got a little bit bigger, more aggressive knob or whatever you want to call it. So it does seem to grip a little better.
Excellent.
Once you start to get it more snow, like a couple inches.
Folks, welcome to Tire Talk with Uncle Kenny.
Yeah, where I dork out on tires.
So Bargazzi, we did Minions, talked about Nards.
Yep.
Do we want to even bring up the 2XL?
Oh, I think it's a valuable thing to bring up. I mean, when
nice article though on fatbike.com about it.
Yep, definitely check it out. Somebody cool wrote that.
Right, right.
No, I probably much more eloquent in that article than I possibly will be able to be here.
Okay.
But that said, I mean, it's a really, really great tire when you're in very, really extreme conditions, but you know, the Bud and Lou is pretty damn capable. You know, you gotta be in some pretty gnarly conditions for the 2XL to be good.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the type of thing where somebody on a pair of Bud and Lou's has to be dabbing, you know.
That's when you want to throw in the 2XLs.
Yeah, and, you know, I've liked the 2XLs because, like, a lot of times on, you know, group rides and stuff like that, you know, the person up front knows they're going into it, and they know they're going to work their ass.
You're the musher.
Yeah, yeah.
Go, Ken. You're in front.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, it's
no. Go ahead. You really. You're in front. Go ahead.
It's kind of like having the grooming bike.
Yeah.
You know, you can lay down a really fat track, and
it's nice when you get three of them in front of you.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Exactly.
Three, two. I got six XL. You know, just no. It's oh, it's crazy XL.
Yeah. No. I mean, that lays down a really nice track for the people behind, but. You know, you got to be a pretty strong rider to take the front and
yeah.
just in general be breaking trail, but on top of it, you know, being with the 2XL and be expected to stay up there
right.
all day.
Scott Quirine for hire. He'll blaze your trail with just human power.
Yeah, and it's like, I mean, you look at Scott and what he's been doing is riding that 2XL nonstop all winter long.
Oh, yeah.
And he's blazing the trail, you know, majority of the time
right,
for us.
Right,
and
look, Test Hill. Like, that's vertical. What? You can go.
Exactly.
I want to see what it can do.
Yeah, and then, you know, at the Polar Roll.
Yeah, oh.
You know, he hasn't done a race in quite a while. And
he was on 2XLs?
No, he wasn't. He didn't
okay.
do 2XLs. But right. I guess it was a measure of his fitness.
Okay.
You know, he gets 10th overall, and he was, you know.
Yeah.
Top three for quite a while on the race and stuff.
Right. No kidding.
I kind of got the lowdown.
Nice.
He ended up helping me and another guy out shuttle back. We ended up trying out a point-to-point fat bike route.
Nice.
Scott shuttled us back, and we got the play-by-play of the
future race next year. Listen to fatbike.com for it.
There you go. Yep.
Race of the week, along with the Denver Dope Report.
the new features of Fat Bike Radio.
Exactly. Yeah. So you got to talk to him though when
yeah.
he shuttled you back to
yeah.
the car.
Yeah. So I'm getting kind of long winded. Thanks for bringing me back. but no, he had a really good race. I mean, he was super, super, super strong, and I attribute it mostly to, you know, him just being a total haunch all winter and
yeah.
hauling our ass around.
Right on.
You know, just breaking trail for us. So
yes.
Thank you, Scott. We
yes.
really we love you, man.
Cheers to Scott for hauling our asses around all year.
So, anything else on tires?
Shit, no.
Okay,
let's take a
exhausted
break.
Exhausted that.
Yeah, let's take a break because they need a break and I need a break. So
I need a beer. So
all right, we'll be right back.
Welcome back, campers.
Welcome back to the Love Boat. Here we are. I'm Julie McCoy. I'll be your cruise director this evening.
So you brought up the topic of rims and tubeless compatible rims.
I did, and that was on purpose, of course.
Yes.
Yes.
I can't go back.
I'm sorry to hear that, Ken.
I can't go back to like a non-tubeless compatible rim.
Okay.
For sure. And I don't know if I can go back to metal wheels after going carbon, just because, I mean, and the carbon's awfully nice in a lot of ways, but I mean, just the tubeless compatibility
it's
and not
really
having
nice.
To fuck around with rim strips
right,
and
right.
all that other stuff.
Right.
I mean, yeah. just it's super straightforward.
And it's, and you know, I forgot to congratulate you in front of everybody else for winning the lottery. So you have all this freaking money to buy these carbon rims. I mean, if I can't buy a carbon rim though, are there tubeless aluminum rims for me?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. They're starting to come out now.
Okay,
yeah.
Holy Rolling Daryl, right?
Yeah.
My other brother Daryl.
I'm not sure how available that is yet.
Because when we talked to him, we thought it was going to be available by
yeah,
now.
Yeah, I haven't really heard a whole lot about that, but I think that's going to be a good option. But I mean, like the Mule Fit from
okay.
Sunringle, that's a super solid option.
What's the width on that?
That's an 80 mil rim.
Oh, no kidding?
It's a little over 80, I
the
think.
The Mule Foot's 80.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah,
okay.
And that's a really, really, really good option.
Tubeless ready rim.
Yep. I can't think of it offhand. I haven't really looked around too much for this. Typically, I look at rims a bunch at the beginning of the winter because people ask me to build wheels. So,
right.
you know, I check it all out then.
Yeah.
I haven't looked at it in a little while, so I'm not up on that. But there's a bunch of other options. It's becoming pretty popular.
Is the weight worth the money?
What do you mean?
The weight gain, the weight loss from carbon to aluminum.
Everybody's got to do their own calculation.
I mean,
on that.
I would love to have a carbon set of 80s.
Well,
awesome.
you joked about me winning the lottery or something, but the thing is, I've been buying. I'm going to phrase it this way. I've been willing to take the risk to buy direct China carbon rims.
All right, and we've talked about that before, I think.
Yeah.
Unrecorded podcast.
Yeah, I mean, there is inherent risk on that you cannot expect much of probably a warranty. You can't expect much as far as customer service. There's going to be a variability in quality. I mean, there's a lot of value to getting a real name brand rim for a lot of people, because it could, you could have a great experience or you could have a bad experience, and you're just rolling the dice to some extent.
Right, but what if I don't know you and I'm listening to this thing?
Right.
And I don't know what I'm looking for. The only reason I know what I'm looking for is because you know what you're looking for. And you,
well,
you know.
And, you know, if you're willing to go out and do your research,
okay,
you know, or tap into people that have experience and things like that. I mean, you can okay. you can have a really good experience yeah. going that route, and it can be a great way to go.
You've got years of research, though.
Yeah, yeah, I definitely kind of dug in on a lot of stuff.
You kind of geeked out
on that. I mean, when you compare the price difference, if you're willing to end up going cheap Chinese, okay. it's not that huge a difference.
Okay.
But that said, I mean, it's expensive. I'll be the first to say it.
Did we learn that I could save $100 and not gain that much weight?
I think the bigger thing is I wouldn't recommend anybody get a rim that's not tubeless compatible at this point. And I don't give a crap what the material is. That thing better be tubeless compatible. Because, I mean, it makes it so nice to switch between tires.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's...
Is there a tube army out there that don't like tubeless?
I'm sure there are.
Okay,
but, I mean, I think it's more
so easy.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like with a mountain bike. Right. Once you got a tubeless compatible setup going, it's so easy to switch tires. You don't even really think about it. Same thing happens with a fat bike. It's just, if you're trying to do these conversion things, it can be a royal pain in the butt.
And that's why I don't want to switch my tires.
Right, okay. Exactly. Yeah, I mean, because you don't have a tubeless compatible rim.
All I want for Christmas is some carbon rims. Some carbon rims. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, tubeless compatibility, I'm so glad it's finally become popular because I can't go back. I would never ride anything that wasn't tubeless.
Okay.
Yeah, because it's just so nice to have that route.
Good.
And, you know, a plethora of good tires that are tubeless compatible already. Everything just seems to be getting finally dialed in.
And everybody's making carbon rims.
Yeah, in a lot of cases. Yeah. So I mean you can go carbon, you can go aluminum, it doesn't really make a difference. They're both good. It's just go tubeless for sure. I mean, it's really nice.
Is it just as this is what my daughter said today. She's like, "Now Dad, when you do that podcast, you play the guy who doesn't know anything, right?" And I was like, "Yeah, that's me." So when I go let's say that I don't want to spend the money to go carbon. I want to go tubeless aluminum. Will that set up just as easy as the carbon rim will?
With a properly designed rim, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, like, I mean, I've set up a few mule fits, and they've all gone super, super smoothly.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, I think that's totally a viable option.
Certainly needs to send us my other brother, Daryl.
Yes, we can test that out for them.
Can we leave that bulleted topic?
Yeah.
I want to just plug every company I can during this podcast so that all 12 of you that listen to us can go out and spend your money and say that you heard it on this podcast. But the Wolfhammers are considerably better than the Lakes in terms of boots.
Yeah.
In terms of warmth, and because my hands aren't the problem.
Yeah.
I can go liners 20 degrees.
Yeah, you're kind of nuts that way.
Yeah. But my feet are my Achilles heel near there. And when I got those Wolfhammers, I didn't need to do toe warmers all the time.
Yeah.
And I'm not putting my Lakes on under 30 degrees without toe warmers.
Yeah, the Wolfhammers, that's what I ride.
Yeah.
It's a super nice boot.
And I thought it was going to be a pain in the ass to get my foot into just from the looking at the, but it's really not. Once you fit into it, you can slide it, you know, once you break it in.
Yeah, and I find you got to loosen up the laces and then your foot goes in no problem.
Right. And Quiring was like, "Watch me put my boot on so fast."
We have the older style. Quiring, he's got the new style.
Right.
Yeah.
They got a new name too, I think.
No, I think you're talking about like the super hardcore something, Gnarwal or something. I don't know.
It's something crazy.
It, they've got a super hardcore boot, which I don't know anything about. But he's got the new Wolfenheimers, which are easier on and off, and look like it's good improvements in a lot of different ways.
So that's what I learned this past winter was that Wolfhammers, or however Wolfenhammers or whatever, Svanthammer or is that they're considerably warmer Lakes are good. I wore the Lakes, you know.
Yeah, good boot.
On a road ride, I've been wearing my Lakes. Mm-hmm. You know, when it's warm enough to get on the road. Sorry, but when I get on the road, those are fine. So they're still good boots. The other thing that I wanted to talk about or mention was the amount of different kind of pogies. Mainly just the 45 North ones. But just in accessories all around, it seems like more companies are coming out with more winter riding type of gear because
oh, yeah.
it's becoming more popular. And they're like, oh, wow, watch this. We can have a water bottle cage that won't freeze. And we can have these new pogies that can fold up for really cold or not really cold. And
well, we're seeing maturity in a lot of the market. I mean, like yeah. when you talked about pogies, it's like, I mean, there's been a lot of really good super cold condition pogies, like, you know, been kind of honed
right.
for Alaska and stuff.
I feel like Gary Fisher in the 80s.
But, I mean, for our, like, you know, lower 48, you know, yeah. more normal temperatures
sure.
where, you know, it's really not getting that cold in a lot of cases. There's some good, or you have a wide range, you know, there's some really good options. I mean, like the...
Yeah.
The wolf tooth ones. I mean, those look sweet. I haven't tried them, but I mean,
oh yeah,
I'm really impressed with the features they built into it.
They look really cool.
Yeah, so there's some neat stuff that way. You know, it just seems like there's a lot more companies.
Frame bags, different sizes, different styles. Yep. Seen a lot of those, and Gomez is giving a few away for, you know, their literature contest. but it really good to see that stuff. You know.
Oh yeah, yeah, definitely.
And
well,
you can
dial
in your stuff more.
And Well, there's aspects of it that I don't like, the specialized, specific, like, fat bike clothing. Because, I mean, it's pricey stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's chi-chi. And, you know, I feel like it's you're going to pay a premium for that stuff. But it's sweet that they're making really fat bike-specific stuff. Because, I mean, I ride, you know, like, Patagonia jacket, you know, soft shell. That's been kind of, like, my little thing. And, you know, some stuff like that that has worked out really well because it crosses over from cross-country skiing or whatever.
Sure. Yeah.
And it's worked great, but there's refinements that would be awesome for being in the riding position or pockets
right.
in certain spots and all these kind of things like that. And it's nice to see these, you know, high-tech materials getting applied
sure.
to the fat bike world.
Yeah.
Because it's going to make better stuff.
And Gomez has been getting that stuff tested. Him and Greg have been getting stuff tested and putting it up. And super interesting to read about, you know, all that stuff coming from those companies.
Yep. Yeah, so it's nice to see the proliferation, just the cold weather gear in general.
Right.
You know, it's just we're in a plush spot compared to where we were a couple years ago.
Yeah. So I wanted to mention accessories kind of a deal because those are important too. Did you want to talk about something else before about what we learned before we get into holy shit, watch this?
You talking about like switching into plus bikes and
right, exactly.
Where our minds
exactly.
are
spring, yeah.
this gets back to me being a total dork with my bikes. And it's like I'm
Tech Talk with Uncle Kenny.
I'm fortunate to have Scott put up with me and my bike requests. But the big difference I had this year is I got on the Triple B, and that is, you know, I kind of consulted with Scott on that, and you know, he and I debated a lot about it to come up with it. And it was kind of, I'll be honest, you know, it's like kind of both of our evolution and thinking about, okay, what's a really good adventure deep woods bike, what's the best geometry, or you know, the best geometry we could end up doing based on, you know,
frame designed around that tire.
Well, it was a frame design around that tire, but the geometry was designed for kind of specific conditions. You know, this really kind of, you know, loose conditions or where you got like several inches of powder,
this
like
adventure.
Maybe 6-8 inches of powder, and you got ruts and who knows what underneath that. And, you know, you got to
only rely on yourself.
Or you're going out on Lake Michigan right after it froze, and, you know, it's just like this sea of baby heads that, you know, all these boulder-type things that you got to ride through, and just, you know, craziness.
Yeah.
I don't know how else to put it. Like, what is the ideal fat bike
and
for
just
that?
In case you break through, you can hang onto your tires and float back to safety.
So one of the central things, I mean, the front-end geometry, pretty similar. You know, chain stays as short as you can get them. That's pretty standard.
Uh-huh.
But dropping the bottom bracket down. I really like the low bottom bracket.
Okay, explain this one to me.
Okay, so what happens, you know, like, that's basically how high your cranks are above the ground.
Right.
When you get a really low bottom bracket, sometimes you can have pedal strikes. That's kind of the big negative.
Pedal strikes in the winter?
That's the thing. In the winter, If you're not, if it's designed for more backcountry stuff, typically it's not really technical winding. You're taking a bunch of hard corners, and you typically don't have like
See rocks.
Well, or you don't have like really high traction conditions where you're leaning the bike way over.
Right.
So you know the bike's typically pretty upright.
Right.
And you want to have as much stability as possible. And what that does is by lowering your cranks, you know, lowering your pedals, it lowers your center of gravity and it makes you much more stable. So okay. There's a lot of times that it was just like, you know, the bike's slipping all over the place and I don't have any idea how I kept rolling, you know, how I didn't have to put a foot down, but I did. Okay. Or, you know, I didn't have to put the foot down. I did keep going and it was awesome.
Might that be something that fat bike manufacturers pay attention to in the future?
Yeah. The thing is, though, it's one of those, it's as you get more towards the backcountry style bike, you know, or an adventure bike, that's where I feel like that kind of comes in handy more. There was times it was a pain in the butt. There's, you know, times where it was really rutted out and like it was after a thaw and like, you know, some pickup truck had gone driving down the roads.
Right.
And, you know, there's like, you're like.
And you're, every pedal is a foot in the snow.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or you're bouncing off the sides of stuff. I mean, there's sometimes it can be a royal pain.
Okay.
You know, it's not just all perfect, but. For a majority of the time, I found that to be a highly advantageous thing.
So it served, did it serve a purpose as like some guy who walks a wire across the Grand Canyon with that big old stick that he's got? Is it, you know, he like tips, but he doesn't know because his thing is so far out to the left. He just goes dink like that and he's back. So maybe when you were going down the trail, you know, back and forth, that low BB was just keeping you stable on the wire.
Yes, that's exactly what it was doing. And so that's been, you know, from a geometry standpoint, that was kind of the thing that I played around with this year. And
okay.
I was really impressed with that. Now, it can be kind of a pain in the butt when you're on, like, groomed trails and you got, like, primo conditions and you're really leaning the bike over. Sometimes you can't pedal as far into a corner and get on the pedals as fast out of it. So, there, I mean, there's a plus and a negative to it. But for adventuring, it's a pretty cool feature. That varied from, like, the 2XL tires. It was, I want to say it was, like, 12 and a half, 12 and a quarter. I think it's 12 and a quarter.
Okay.
And then once you put 4.8s on there, it actually dropped below 12 inches. It'd be, like, 11 and 7/8, 11 and 3/4. And then I went all the way down to running the Beasties, and that would drop it down where I was, like, probably, like, 11.6 inches or something. That's a really low bottom bracket.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then on top of it, I'm running 180 mil crank arm.
Okay.
So, you know, I got long crank arms. So,
yeah.
You know, I'm
Yeah, you do. You got long crank arms.
Rider.
Yeah. Doot-doot-doot and doot-doot.
Yep. So, that was another thing I kind of learned about, and that was cool. So.
Gotcha.
I like frame experiments.
Oh, my gosh. Yawn. let's chill for a sec. We're going to take a break. Here's some... Ken's got some nice music lined up for you. That's probably something.
I don't know what it is yet.
But no, but it's going to be
gonna
good.
Be inspired.
Exactly.
Be
we'll
awesome.
Be right back, folks.
Welcome back, campers.
Here we are going into the next section about what we're looking forward to rather than what did we like and learn.
Yes. So.
This is where Ken takes over for the next 8 to 10 bullets. I have no idea. You're paying attention to what's going on, and I'm waiting for you to pay attention to what's going on so that I can hear what's going on.
Well, so once again, this kind of gets back to what we talked about at the beginning, where, you know, there was Interbike and all the stuff got released and stuff. And
sure.
We haven't really seen much of it, or we haven't actually found out because, you know, we can start off with forks because there's a lot that's happened in fork world.
Mm-hmm. I just bought one.
And they yes, congratulations.
Thank you.
A fork manufacturer might describe it as being a 27 plus, but
right.
I mean, as we all know, kind of in the fat bike world, that, you know, saying, you know, putting a label on something can be kind of ambiguous, and you might be able to fit different size tires and different size wheels and all sorts of other stuff because we're finally starting to get so many different options. There's this spectrum that goes all the way from, you know, road bikes at less than an inch all the way up to, you know, 5.1 inches for any given rim size. It seems like it's starting to
get there. So are you suspecting that these 27 plus forks that are coming out can fit 29 plus,
I don't have a ton of experience. I'm gonna say that, like, direct experience myself, but I've done a bunch of reading from really reputable sources, and it looks like, you know, for instance, like the there's a Fox 27 Plus boost. It's 110 spaced front fork, and that fits. I would describe it as everything, but it doesn't. I mean, from Fat Bike World, it doesn't fit like 4.8 inch tires and things like
but
that.
But it'll fit 26 by 4.
Yeah, it definitely fits 27 plus. It fits 29 plus.
Yeah.
It fits 26 by 4.
Yeah.
Like a, the example that I saw that had ample space was a Van Helga on a 70 millimeter whiskey carbon rim.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then it sounds like this, the Bontrager 27, 0.5 Hodag.
Yeah.
Like it's I think it's labeled as a 4-inch tire, but it's no 4-inch tire. It's,
okay.
It really comes in at like 3.5 inches.
But oh, wow.
Even that will fit on there.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, it fits all sorts of stuff.
29 plus, though, you think?
Yeah. That's the word on the street.
So you don't need to make a 29 plus specific fork.
That's in this situation. No.
Because they can sell more forks to 27 plus. And have the few 29 plus people use it.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. It's a really, really, really versatile fork, which is cool. You know, I think
so.
It's,
we've got a whole bunch of manufacturers making these.
Well, there's that. There's the RockShox Reba.
Okay.
Their boost thing can do 27 plus, and then they got another one that can do 29 plus. That's a sweet fork. I mean,
what's the spacing on all these?
Almost all of them are boost. The
they're all boost. Okay.
Yeah, 110 by 15 millimeter.
Oh, so I'm going to need another new set of wheels. Thanks, industry.
Oh, when it opens up the doors like it has with the Plus World, it's annoying to have another size, yes, but damn, has it like opened the floodgates for Plus stuff.
Yeah, on that Dragon Slayer was a Fox 34, 27 and a half plus.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah, so
boost,
I just,
you know
the bottom line as far as how I'm kind of seeing it is that, okay, boost was, people had just kind of gone through axles, so
yeah.
Yeah, that was kind of just a change. But the boost thing, I mean, it's pretty cool what it's done, because there's all sorts of really, really, really rad bikes that are starting to come out. I mean, there's all these forks. I mean, even like, you know, RockShox doing a Pike in 27 plus. And, you know, a Pike is a really, really
popular.
Yeah, it's a highly acclaimed fork. It's one of the most liked forks out there.
Listen
right now.
Listen to podcasts where they go Pike all the time, and I go to the next podcast. Jeez, I got my Pike.
But so yeah, I mean, there's some forks that have been really popular in recent years that are starting to go this that will fit these Plus tires, which
gotcha.
that's rad.
Right,
and you still got the Manitou Magnum. You know, I mean, that's a solid fork.
Yeah, you rode that last summer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's a nice fork.
Reasonable.
I guess, you know, this is the old school, but like the MRP.
Right.
I think they call it the Stoke or something like that. It basically will fit a 27 plus 80
oh, okay.
or 100, and then I think it's like the Stage or something like that. They have one that'll fit 120 and 140. And then still 29 plus wheel.
Oh, good.
But that's 100 space.
Good.
You know, so it's kind of your old school option. And I've got an MRP. I really, really, really like it.
So if you're listening to this podcast, then you probably like fat bikes and you're really leaning towards Plus bikes or have a Plus bike. And so there's more options now for Plus bike riders.
Yep.
You can always convert your fat bike over to Plus.
Yeah.
Go back to podcast number. Virgin number one, I think that was.
Yeah, I think that's how we kicked it off. Is talking
I think,
about
yeah, with
doing
like
the conversion.
3 hours of blah 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 is what somebody said. And the other thing I see that you've got written down here is lots of wide rim options.
Yeah. So
wide. What are you talking about? Wide.
I'm talking like plus size, like anything where
from 40
like
on up to
30 millimeter.
Okay,
internal,
so just plus size. Okay.
On up.
Okay.
Yeah.
To so, 50.
Yeah, and it, you know, I mean, kind of, if you know, people aren't up on sort of what we've been riding.
Yeah.
For the last 2 years, I've been riding a 29 plus setup. I've got it's a 35 millimeter external, 30 millimeter internal rim, and I've been super pleased with that. That has been a really, really, really good 29 plus setup with true 3-inch tire.
And there's other people besides you who know just as much as you, if not more, and also ride the 35 as a plus tire, as a plus rim, and die by, you know, swear by it.
Exactly.
They don't die by it. Sorry.
It's totally a viable size. You know, it's not like your tires getting floppy at low pressure and stuff like that. You know, you know,
hopefully we'll get over that myth of the 50 mil being what you need for a plus size.
Yeah, I can see situations where you want to maximize the amount of float. I mean, okay. So, and this is, I'm completely off topic, but this is something I wanted to mention about, like, our recap
from the
winter. Off-topic
talk by Uncle Kenny.
So the thing I learned, I finally started riding 100 mil rims consistently. I will never go back from 100 mil rims for, like, deep winter riding.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
Just because it fattens out every tire, and every tire is it's a better tire when it's 100 mil.
You go fat, you can't go back.
Yeah. So, and that doesn't apply to summer riding. With summer riding, if I was going to ride my fat bike in the summer, I would go for like a 65, 70 mil rim.
Yeah.
I think that's the optimum size.
Okay.
The reason why I bring this up right now is with the plus tire thing, I can see a case where a 50 mil, rim, 3-inch tire could be the bomb. But it's like what we're doing is a lot of times is cross country style riding and stuff like that. Going up to Copper Harbor and, hucking off the stuff.
Yeah.
I felt like the 35 millimeter rim and a 3-inch tire worked really well. I've said it here a few times before, but my rule of thumb is if the pressure, if you're basically worried about bottoming your tire out on bumps and stuff like that, and that is what's making you rise the pressure versus, your tire feeling unstable, then your rim is, totally wide enough to support the tire. And that's always where I've been. Bottoming out, I'm whacking the rim on hard stuff, but I'm not feeling the tire wiggle or whatever. It doesn't feel unstable to me
at
those pressures. So it's fine. It's stable enough.
Okay.
A skinnier rim is it's a lot lighter. And then I guess the other thing that the skinnier rim, and people talk about the tire flapping over and stuff like that. I feel like there's a more nuanced perspective of that. The tire feels very lively, and that can be sometimes it can be bouncy, which is not a good thing. But I don't know. It's kind of like when you talk about like riding a good steel frame or a good tie frame or something like that. There's a liveliness to it. There's a springiness to it, which can be very fast feeling on the trail.
Dude.
So
what the fuck?
So, as
the man who those nipple washers were way better than riding that rim without nipple washers. Like what?
I'm sorry.
It's good because that stuff I don't notice. I don't pay attention to, and when you bring it out I'm like, "Wow."
So the rims that are available now.
So the rims,
there's a ton of rims available.
Right. In terms of plus sizes, yes.
Yeah, DT's making some really what I would think are great plus rims. The XM 481, it's a 30 millimeter internal width rim.
Can you run a 3-inch on it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they make a 27 and a 29-inch.
Okay.
It's the 27-inch is typically their weights are the same as the model number thing.
Right.
So I would guess, I think it's right around 480 grams.
I got a question.
Yeah.
And because my question is not one of these bulleted items, but do you think that this summer, as spring people, start thinking about what they want to ride for the season, that we'll see in more plus riders and if you say yes, which I think you're going to say, do you think it'll be more 27.5 plus or more 29 plus? And then the follow-up question is, why? Is it because of the industry telling us that we need to see 27.5 plus?
Fork and road going total.
Oh, totally fucking rogue on this. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
All right, so you're going
to total left-hand
turn. You're going to have to pull me back.
No, I will.
Rim
world,
because I can go off on this one for a long time.
Okay, so first question was more plus riders?
Yes. Okay, and so this is commentary on the industry thing. Sorry. I'm going to kind of like peripherally answer this.
Okay.
One of the things I'm really stoked about is that it seems like the kind of the industry folk, you know, like the big company people and things like that, they're finally starting to be like, oh, plus bikes actually are kind of cool. They actually can be really nice to ride sometimes.
We're not talking about Trek, though.
No. They got it for sure.
Oh, yeah.
But there's a lot of other people that haven't, and they're just like, you know, plus bikes are for beginners. They just dumb down the ride. Beep, 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 beep. I'm sorry. That's fucking bullshit. And pardon my language on that yes. one. I'm going to try not to be as potty mouthed as I was last
You've been
podcast.
Good so far. So yeah, all of a sudden, he drops the F-bomb.
Yep, sorry. So I'm getting impassioned here. Right. Yeah, a beginner rider can ride stuff on a plus bike they wouldn't be able to ride otherwise, and they're going to feel more secure, and they're going to have more fun, and it's going to be better.
But I can ride it faster.
But that's what I mean. It doesn't mean that it's dumbed down, because an expert rider is going to be able to ride a lot of stuff quicker with a bigger smile on their face and have more fun on a plus size tire too.
Sure.
So it's not. I mean, why do you have to be derogatory like that? And I'm glad that there's some people in the industry that seem like they're finally getting over that.
Yeah.
Getting over their bias on this one and realizing, hey, plus does some stuff that's really cool.
Right.
Let's keep an open mind about it. And we're now starting to see some really, really rad stuff coming out. I mean, like.
Here we go.
I'm getting off
I
track,
knew it. But, I don't even. I just look at you and I'm like, oh, he's gonna go.
No, just start looking at some of the full suspension bikes we've had come out. I mean,
that's what we did last night for the Armed Recorded Podcast.
Yeah, the Santa Cruz Hightower. I mean, what a badass bike! And then you got the
Ibis,
Mojo 3.
Yeah,
I mean, that's another just sweet bike. Although I take exception to their. Limiting options on tires, even if they think a 2.8-inch tire give me the option for a 3, damn it.
So more plus bike riders this season.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Because what's happening is, I mean, anybody who's ridden the plus stuff, they go out there and it's just like the fat bike stuff. All of a sudden, you've got a bigger grin on your face. There's stuff it does that is really, really, really cool. And it's not perfect for everything.
Right. There's so many people that rode mountain bikes in the summer that poo-pooed fat bikes, and now they've got a fat bike.
Yeah, they finally
eventually.
Get it.
Yeah,
yeah. They went out and did it, and now they're not just talking about somebody they're seeing do it. Now
they're
doing it themselves, and like, holy crap, this is cool.
So, I'm an avid cyclist. I've been reading. I've been paying attention. I've been listening to Fat Camp. I know about these plus bikes. I'm going to go buy one. Am I going to buy a 27 plus? Or am I going to buy a 29 plus?
Okay, so.
I think I'm going to buy a 27 and a half plus.
That could be a really good idea.
Yep.
Now, that said, I think 27 and a half. Plus is the easier one to adopt for the industry. And the reason why I say that is because it's almost the same size as 29. There's not going to be things that are that radically different. You're really only changing bikes in one dimension. You're making it so that, they're a little bit wider as far as their width and things like that. And the boost, spacing has allowed that to happen, no problem. It's like all of a sudden you ended up, gaining 3 millimeters, and that 3 millimeters, Andy, moving the fire a little closer again. It's getting cold around here.
No, I'm listening to you, though.
No, but boost easily widened bikes. So all of a sudden, since it's about the same diameter as 29er, just your bike's wider, we can throw a tire in there. And I don't want to be derogatory to Ibis. I absolutely love Ibis. I think Scott Nickel is, like, totally the shit, and I've lusted after their bikes for years. But it almost seems like what they did was they built their new version of the Mojo. They did boost because that kind of has become the established standard now for your hub spacing.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, damn, this thing actually ends up fitting a 2.8-inch tire now. Sweet. And then when they rode it, and they're like, holy crap, this thing's awesome. And then they tried to ride something a little bit bigger, and they're like, it gets a little bouncy.
Oh, okay.
We don't need to end up working a little harder on our engineering to give a little bit more tire spacing.
No.
We're just going to limit people, which I think is crap, personally. I mean, I think, now I'm way off track, but I can see where a 2.8-inch tire is really the sweet spot for a lot of conditions. However, damn it, there's sometimes that a 3-inch tire is going to be better because you just need the more float. And why limit me? So I'm a little bit pissed with Ibis about that because I have like basically had a crush on Ibis bikes for years and years and years and years and years, and I wanted one, and that is the deal killer for me as far as considering getting you know, a Mojo.
But I do think you answered my question on what size plus bikes and why.
Okay. No, I didn't really answer that because I think we're going to see this huge proliferation of 27 plus.
Okay.
But I think 29 plus still really, 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 really has a place. And there's a lot of people that kind of feel like once you've gone 29 plus, you can't go back to 27 plus.
Oh.
Because the advantages of the 29 plus are so significant. Now, that said, 27 plus is a better application for smaller riders because 29 plus is a big flipping wheel. You can custom make stuff, but it's tough to do a production.
Yeah, you've got
to
have
it
custom.
Yeah, you know, like if you're, I don't know, like 5'4" or something like that, 29 plus, that's going to be a stretch for you. You know, you're going to have a really hard time finding a production bike that's going to be able to fit you. So, you know, that'd be a case where 27 plus would be much more appropriate.
Gotcha.
Also, when you start getting really long travel, you know, like when you've got over 5 inches of travel on a bike,
yeah,
you know, a 29 plus is a really big wheel. So I can see where a 27 plus would be the better option than 29 plus. 29 plus is just probably not feasible when you're talking that long of travel.
Okay.
So like the Ibis and, you know, the Santa Cruz High Tower and stuff like that, I think, I mean, that's 27 plus in those applications for a trail bike, totally appropriate.
Huh.
So, I mean, I personally feel like if it's for fit reasons, you got to go smaller or it's long travel. Totally fine, 27 plus. But
okay.
29 plus is probably the superior just because the rollability and everything else that goes along with it. It's a really nice ride.
Fair answer. Understand.
Yeah. And I think my hope is that over time that the industry will evolve to support both because there's a time and a place for both.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of like this cake bicycle thing.
You
know, it's like I can't possibly comprehend why somebody would go with a 24 inch wheel just because it's so small, but I'm 6'4", so of course I'm not going to be able to comprehend
sure.
it. Whereas if I was a 5 foot, you know, woman, yeah, okay, you could get a custom bike and you can end up being fit on a 26 inch wheel with 4.8 inch tire and blah 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 blah,
right?
But in a production setting, I can see, or like if you're riding on groomed trails where you don't have to worry about the float and stuff, you just want a really fast, really
right.
flickable setup.
Right.
I can see a 24-inch bike being
right
rad.
On. Yeah, the only reason, and when we both know who we're talking about when we talk about the 5 foot woman, and the only reason that bike, that 29 plus / 26-inch fat bike fits her is because it's custom.
Yeah, yeah. yeah.
And in her case, I would totally,
yeah, it's,
you know, you'd have to go, that, yeah, 24 would be perfect for her. And, you know,
well,
27.5 plus would be perfect.
Yeah, okay. So what Andy's talking about is there's a Quirin that was built up for a friend of ours' wife. And she's 5 foot tall. It fits 4.8-inch tires, bud and loose, are what she rides on Marge lights
yep.
in the winter.
Yep.
And then she switches over to a 29 plus by 3-inch tire during the summer. And the bike fits her awesome. You know, it's a super small frame.
It's really weird looking though.
Yeah, there's no toe clip overlap. Yeah, exactly. But the bike just absolutely rips. But, you know, Quirin had to build a fairly short fork. There's like a super, super, super short head tube. Like you couldn't use a tapered steer fork on there because the
yep.
taper would go up too high.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of things like that you can do in a custom setting that work just fine. But in a production setting would be really tough.
Right.
And they live kind of at the gateway to some of the best backcountry riding that we've got.
Yep, they live at the beginning of the yellow brick road.
Yeah. So, you know, they have a situation where you want a backcountry tire, and that's going to be – it's going to be wide, and it's going to be big diameter because
yep.
you're going to gain more float.
So she's got Bud Lou whenever she needs it.
Yeah. So, you know, right. that's a perfect bike for her scenario. Right. But if I lived in a city and there was groomed trail and that was all I rode and I really didn't go out and, you know, do backcountry style riding.
Yeah.
And I wanted just some like super light flickable thing and I was a little, you know, wee little thing.
Sure.
Heck yeah, 24-inch would be rad.
Watch this. Rims. Rims.
Yes, you're bringing me back. Bringing me back.
No, okay. Not slowly, but just rims.
Okay, all right.
So everyone's got plus size rims.
Yeah. Okay. So DT, they got several different ones that are really cool looking for 27.
Your
plus
freaking Wi-Fi
plus.
Sucks out here. I got to go get it again.
Yeah. The fire pit has not got good Wi-Fi signal. But they also end up making another rim called the XM 551. That's a 40 millimeter internal width, 27 diameter. Easton's starting to make their Arc Plus line. I think they've got three different widths, a 35, a 40, and a 45 width. Then you've still got, I forgot the WTBs. WTB has got the scraper, which, you know, a lot of people are familiar with because that was on a lot of bikes, in the fall and during the summer, but they've also come out with a new rim. I think it's like this asymmetric TCM, and that's it's the TCM I-35, which means the internal width is 35 millimeters.
TCM or TCS?
Oh, excuse me, TCS.
Yeah.
My bad. And they make that both in 27 and 29-inch diameters.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, like, the great part about it is, you know, you and I ended up both going with 29 inch carbon rims,
yeah,
because that was the only way we could get a 35 millimeter rim other than the Velocity rims, which were I've had issues with their tubeless performance,
right. Okay,
so there wasn't an aluminum option, there wasn't hardly any carbon options even, but that there was the one carbon option. So it's so nice to end up seeing there's like four or five different options in aluminum rims that are reasonable price and a reasonable weight with really good tubeless, you know, characteristics and a good price.
What? Why asymmetric? What's the? Why would I want that?
Okay, so asymmetric. If you look at either your front hub or your back hub, both of them, the hub is typically not centered, so you end up having a wheel that is not symmetric, and your wheel is only as strong as the, I'm trying to figure out how to describe it best, the most narrow side of the hub. So when you can end up having a rim that's not symmetric and you can make it so you can build a symmetric wheel, that makes it way stronger. So it's an easy way to build stronger wheels that aren't any heavier or anything else like that. It's just it's a really, really, really sweet thing that you can end up doing that way. So that WTB asymmetric rim is probably one of the ones that I'm most excited about, and I'm pretty stoked about the DT ones too. I haven't really checked into the Easton as much. Those might end up being good. I haven't spent as much time looking at them. So there's those. Whiskey, they've come out with a plus tire also. It's the 45
millimeter. I like whiskey.
It's 45 millimeter internal. It's a pretty cheap price, but a lot of people are real big fans of their fat bike carbon rim. So I think this is going to kind of follow in that tradition. I'm guessing this will be a really nice rim. And then you got all the standbys. You got, you know, the Sunringle, Mule Fit. You got the Rabbit Hole. You got the Velocity Dually. And there's,
does a Rabbit Hole weigh just a shit ton though?
Yeah, it's not light.
Okay.
And, you know, its tubeless performance is, you know, less than perfect. So,
yeah,
it's, you know, it's not, it's, I would describe it as a dated solution.
Sure.
You know, there's better options out there at this point.
Okay.
But, I mean, heck, man, it started it all off, so you can't fault it.
No, but, you know, with everyone going tubeless and the tubeless tires and, you know, squirting the juice in there and having to seal right up.
Yeah, that, you know, and that's such a nice way to go.
Yeah, and that was already talked about. But, wow, there's a lot going on.
Oh, and yeah, we've only even just scratched the surface. There's so right. much going on in the Plus world.
Right.
So, Plus is blowing up. I love it. I'm actually going to probably get a 27 Plus bike here pretty soon.
Oh, my God. There's the podcast about now the 27 Plus. So, because, you know, it's Gomez said, you know, just keep it fat and keep it plus, and so we'll do that, and we're probably going to get plussy.
Yeah, it's going to be plussy for a while.
Nice.
But that said, I'm definitely looking forward to beach riding coming up in the summer, and I'm looking forward to some of the moto trails, which are super sandy, which,
right.
you know, a big fat tire is still the best thing to ride. So
yeah.
We're gonna be getting into that. And we still have a ton of spring season.
Sure.
You know, we're looking at getting a big snow this week. Fingers crossed.
Yep.
We still have way more than a foot of snow. You know, a little bit inland that we were riding on today, which is amazing.
Yeah, that'll take a lot of wind, water, and heat to get rid of. So we, you know, even though we're like 40, 45 inches under normal, you know, right now in terms of snow, but there's still in the woods, there's a lot of snow for us to play on for another month.
Yeah, so I'm guessing we might record before we head on a trip down to North Carolina.
Yeah, oh yeah, we might record in Carolina without those guys.
Yes, we might. It might be interesting.
Cool, man.
We'll see. but we'll definitely have a lot of plus stoke going on then.
Oh, totally.
Yeah, we're going to be spending a week down there.
We got some new toys.
Yeah, that's not going to be fat bike. That's going to be all plus bike.
So. Right on. Well, cool, man. I'm glad we got to talk about what we enjoyed and what we're looking forward to.
Yep, and, you know, feel free to comment on stuff and give us suggestions and let us know if we screwed anything up.
Yeah.
But
tell us how much blah, blah, blah there was.
Yes, yes. So we thank you for listening.
We're off to see the wizard.
Yes, it's been a good time. Thanks for listening to Fat Camp today. You can find all our shows along with other things from Fat Bike Radio at fat-bike.com, including show notes for today's show.